Happy to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here to talk with you about, well, maybe some aches or maybe some pains or maybe some strains. All kinds of things can happen at this time of the year. And two people who know a whole lot about how to deal with them are Lori Tynebrody and Bill Boisenault. Lori, physical therapist, athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. And Lori, great to have you back.
It's a great day to be here.
And Bill Boisenault, senior physical therapist at the UW Hospitals and Clinics. And it's good. Yeah, we're all kind of crying here because it's his last time.
I know. It's hard to believe. First of all, it is great to be here again. And I'm so glad that I'm here to do this here in September. But yeah, 20 years.
20 years on the air.
Wow.
So that's 250 or so shows.
And yeah, it's hard to believe.
There you go.
We started
a lot of work.
We weren't quite sure what was going to happen, if it would take off at all. Like, we decided we'd try two or three and see how it went, and here we are.
That's a lot of advice.
It's a lot of advice. It's a lot of pains and strains.
It is.
And, you know, and I think in honor of Bill's last day, we're going to make him answer every question today. I'm just going to sit back and drink and drink my coffee.
Well, speaking of questions, we have a few. I want to remind, as you listen to the show today, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Do you guys get, at this time of the year, end of season, gardening, people doing lawn, yard work, do things happen this time of the year to those folks?
Yeah, they do. You know, it's like everything else. There's sort of a flurry of activity that happens. You know, we had several days of rain, and then we have a few days over the weekend of beautiful weather. And so people get out there and they try to get a lot done in a short period of time. And when that happens, people get hurt.
Yeah. That's a pattern. No matter when we transition from one season to the next, there's always kind of seasonal hazards. They're just part of the deal.
Right, right.
And when you have a good weekend, you're right, Laura. You take advantage of it and just do more than you normally would do.
Is it neck or shoulder or back?
It's all of the above. It is primarily neck, back, and shoulder because of the lifting, because of the bending. So, for example, we spent the last couple of weeks shoveling wood chips out of two areas that we're going to cement. So, you know, what we had a few hours when the kids weren't in soccer, and I mean a very few. Mm-hmm. And so there we were, shoveling wood chips, you know, putting them in buckets, lifting them, hauling them, dumping them, and so on. And so, you know, we did it in a pretty big hurry because the weather was right. So people tend to do that.
Well, you know, and daughter Emily was in a bunch of athletic activities this weekend. And one of the things I enjoy about the coaches is that they do a really good job of stretching and getting ready ahead of an event, and even after an event is over, there was a lot of stretching and so forth. But a lot of people don't do that when they're...
Right. Well, and I think there's one of the areas that research is moving now is into recovery.
Yeah.
So there's a certain amount, there's a lot of information about how to do the activity, the lifting, the bending, the this and that, mm-hmm. or the sports participation. But there's an exploding area of research on recovery. And that is, you know, for example, what you told us about Emily, cross country, volleyball, softball. She has no downtime, no recovery time. And recovery is more than just time-based. There's a physical, there's a psychological, there's an emotional piece to recovering from activity. And in the fall sports season, where, you know, you have football, you have cross country, you have soccer, you have swimming, all those things are happening, and they're training every day. And every day that they're not training, they have a competition.
Nice.
And then, you know, these student athletes, they're students also. And then they come home, they've got homework. They're doing homework until 10, 11 o'clock at night. And I can tell you from my family, we have a bunch of sick kids because they're not having sufficient recovery time.
The recovery time, I mean, that's applicable to any age group and any repetitive activity. But you think about the kids, you know, children, teenagers, where the body is still maturing yet.
Yeah.
And recovery time doesn't mean doing another activity.
Right.
it's not multitasking. It's really letting the body shut down and rest for a little while. And it doesn't happen. You mentioned how many sets that your daughter played. know, over the weekend or, you know, in a tournament. I don't know how many matches that they might play. And, you know, their bodies are still growing and developing yet, both emotionally and physically.
Yeah, it's amazing to watch. And, when, you know, I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, I don't remember doing all that when I was her age.
No, I don't think we did.
Right. And actually, and I'm a little more lenient now because of the amount of work that if she wants to sit down and sit in her chair and watch an hour of Disney or or play with her phone some game or something.
Right.
I'm not going to argue about it.
Exactly.
She needs to sit and just sit.
Vegetate.
Yeah. Whatever that looks like.
There's a time and a place for that, right?
Well, in the meantime, we have a full board of questions here. Edward in Hartford has something first. Let's go there. Hi, Edward. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I would like to know what your answer to the tendonitis problem is.
You have tendonitis and...
No, I don't. I got rid of it. But I'll get into that. But I was wondering what your answer is.
You mean a home remedy for tendonitis?
Any kind of remedy.
Any kind of... Well, you know, that we only have an hour and a half, Edward. So we'll start with that. And so I can give you some generalizations. So tendonitis implies an inflammation. We will see a tendonitis in younger individuals who have a true inflammation in their tendon. Once you pass into sort of middle age and older than that, what we tend to see is more tendinopathy, which is a degenerative condition of the tendon. Those are treated differently than a tendonitis is. And the kind of activity and the quantity of activity varies depending upon which of those things it is. What I can say about tendinopathy, which is what we see predominantly, is that the literature is currently supporting a program of eccentrics, we call negative loading, that is lowering weights and relatively heavy weights with combined with some stretching. Is that close enough for you?
I don't get what you're saying about lowering weights.
Okay. So if you think of for example, an elbow curl where you take a weight and you lift it up and you lower it down, we find that tendinopathies respond best to the lowering phase of that, not the lifting phase. So we design exercise programs where the tendon is lowering weight rather than lifting weight.
Oh, so it's always lowering weight.
Always lowering
weight. That's correct.
Weight.
That's right. You kind of assist coming up.
How do you do that?
Well, it depends upon the body part. So, for example, in an Achilles tendon, you would do a toe raise with the uninvolved side, transfer your weight to the injured side, and then lower yourself down.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, if you do that for your quadriceps, you would straighten your knee or have somebody help you straighten your knee, and then you would slowly lower your knee so the muscles contract while it's lengthening.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
I found the stretching is very important. I had tendonitis myself for 6.5 years. And I'm a health professional, and I didn't know what to do for it. So I went the medical route, and they used the cortisone, which was a very slight help temporarily. And then I tried PT. That didn't go anywhere. And I even tried acupuncture. That didn't help. But eventually, because of some things that happened, I developed my own method of treating it, and I incorporate the proper use of heat and cold and stretching exercises and some anti-inflammatory supplements.
So there you go.
Well, and that's usually when Lori talked about distinction of a tendonitis versus tendinopathy. And with a tendonitis, you have to let the area rest and calm down. And so there's a role for heat and ice and gentle stretching. And then when the pain starts getting under control, then you look at, so why did this develop in the first place?
Yeah.
Is it something work-related? Is it something related to posture or you know inappropriate training technique? And then you try to modify those things so it doesn't come back again. But usually when you've had something for 6.5 years, it's more of a tendinopathy than an itis.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call, Edward. Donna in New Berlin will give you a chance now. Hi, Donna. Thank you for calling.
Hi, how are you, Larry?
Great, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Good. I've had trigger finger since about 2013, and in 2013 I had a shot of cortisone, and then it felt fine, and then it started kind of coming back this year, like in June, so I had another shot, and now the shot's gone, and it feels bad again. And I think I've got it, I got it from, I do weightlifting twice a week. And so now the orthopedic surgeon is recommending surgery, and I just wonder if I should go ahead and do that, or if like physical therapy would be the best bet at this point.
Yeah, before you do the surgery, I think it's, you know, unless the surgery is an urgent need and it's not really what you're describing here, you would want to try all aspects of conservative care.
Okay.
And I would recommend seeing a hand therapist, which could be an occupational therapist, a physical therapist, you know, a certified hand specialist. If you contact local clinics or hospitals, they usually have somebody on staff or can direct you. You know, what you described about the cortisone shots ties in what we just discussed with Edward is, you know, the shots sometimes do a good job of calming things down, but the question is, why did it develop in the first place? And so usually, and you get the best result following injections like that with some sort of rehabilitation to help prevent it from coming back again. And with the surgery, there's times for this surgery for trigger finger, but well, you'd want to try a rehabilitation first. Hand therapists can tell you if there's exercises to do, develop a splint for you, maybe to use while you're weightlifting, and maybe figure if there's something else other than the weightlifting that's causing this for you. But that's what I would recommend first.
Okay. Good luck.
Thanks so much. I appreciate your help.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. John in Cedarburg, your turn. Hi, John. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call, Larry and guests. What I wanted to discuss is a knee condition that I have. I was first diagnosed with a torn ligament and put on a panel of anti-inflammatories of prednisolone, a series, and, of course, Voltaren. Went to PT, and the PT actually made the pain worse, my leg, as far as stretching it out. A subsequent MRI has shown a torn Baker's cyst, which I never felt, but indeed it's draining fluid and going down my leg and hurting. So I'm still on the Voltaren, and I have not continued with PT, and yet icing isn't really helping much. I still wake up in the morning very stiff with my leg, and I'm just wondering what your experts feel that I should be concentrating on.
Well, let's back up first. You tore a ligament in your knee. What ligament did you tear?
Well, that was the initial diagnosis without any visualization. But indeed, it was a Baker cyst that was torn, and obviously it was collecting fluid from a an insult to my knee. I should say I'm 68 years old and very physically active and in shape. So perhaps something.
Was there any other damage to your knee when they did the MRI?
No, there was not.
Okay.
I know.
Yeah, that's a very unusual case. I've never heard of a Baker's cyst that ruptures. Usually a Baker's cyst is like a weak spot in your capsule. You can think of it a little bit like a bubble on a tire where there's a weak spot. And when fluid accumulates in your knee, usually as a result of an injury or a degenerative process that makes your knee swell, then that little cyst kind of bubbles out. And then when the swelling goes down, the bubble goes down as well. So it doesn't bother you all the time, and it's not there all the time. But you must have had some swelling in your knee as a result of an injury, and then that caused some fluid accumulation back there and a rupture, actually, in the joint capsule,
right,
would be my guess.
But it's usually associated, like you said, with some sort of meniscal injury or ligamentous, something traumatic.
Right, exactly. So your symptoms are stiffness in the morning. Do you have full range of motion of your knee?
Not at all.
Not at all? What kind of range do you have?
I can hardly bend it. If I can bend it half as much as my other knee, that's a good day. And that is, I don't have too many good days. And I'm also wondering about anti-inflammatory therapy, whether I should be concerned with over a month of that.
And how straight does your knee go?
Very, very straight, but I feel the stretch.
In the back of the knee?
Yes.
Okay. And what was the onset of this?
Unknown.
You just woke up one day with it?
I probably have injured it through some physical activity.
Okay.
You know, I don't run, but I'm rather aggressive when I walk.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, because it's unusual to have that great a loss of motion for this long, being on both prednisone and Voltaren.
Right.
So
and a normal MRI, except for this fluid.
Yeah. I'm wondering what where the MRI was done and if they were looking for the right thing. You know, an MRI is not an MRI is not an MRI. They're not all the same. So typically an MRI sequence is chosen based upon the suspicion of what they're looking for. So it's also possible that whatever the initial thinking was, they were thinking it was a torn ligament, that because of the sequences they chose based upon that presumption, that they could have missed something else that might have been picked up with a different sequence. So, you know, at this point, if it were me and it were a month out and I still had half the range that I did in my other knee and you're having this many bad days on that much medication, I'd get another opinion. I'd have it looked at again.
Mm-hmm. Would they do another MRI?
Possibly.
Yeah,
you know,
with different settings.
A different set of assumptions coming in the door.
Right.
Someone else with a fresh look at it might say, oh, no, I don't think it's that at all.
Yeah.
And might order a different sequence MRI.
All right.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah, it's an unusual enough presentation in history that I wouldn't just continue going forward on the presumption that this is a Baker's cyst and that it's going to resolve over time.
Yeah.
And thanks again for calling. Good luck, John. Appreciate your call.
Yeah, thanks for making us really think hard on Bill's last day.
There you go. Bill is Bill Boisenall, professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health for the moment. And Lori Tyne Brody, of course, physical therapist, athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. And Cheyenne Lentz is our on-air producer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, we are talking about your physical health, your aches, pains, sprains, or strains with our two guests, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody. Question for them. We have actually some open lines. Get you on fairly quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Certainly love to hear from you. And Stefan in Caledonia has a question. Stefan, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Can you talk a little bit about the evil that is plantar fasciitis? I was recently diagnosed, and I'm not sure how I created the condition except that I changed the weightlifting regimen to focus on my calves about a month and a half ago. But I've had a cortisone shot, and I'm looking to decide whether or not I should go in for PT or if there's something home-based that I can do.
Oh, what a great – it's so good that we have a plantar fasciitis question on your last day, Bill.
It's appropriate. Stefan, you're not alone.
If that gives you any comfort
at all.
Yeah, exactly. So the change to a focus on your calves, that'll probably do it because I'm guessing you did a lot of toe raise kind of things.
Yeah, pretty heavy weights.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. So that'll do it. That was too abrupt a change in your program. So your plantar fascia didn't like it. Whenever you go up on your toes, it puts a lot of stretch and tension on your plantar fascia. So if you made a pretty significant change in your program relatively quickly, that'll stir it up. So are there home things you can do? Yes, absolutely. And probably number one on my list is a night splint. And you can go on the internet and find all various sorts of night splints. And basically what happens is that at night, our feet tend to go in a pointed direction. They tend to, we call it plantar flex or point down. And that shortens the plantar fascia on the bottom of your foot. And so when you step on it first thing in the morning, you stretch it out abruptly and it really hurts and annoys it. So basically what we do is we put it on a prolonged stretch during the night while you're sleeping. And over time, and the reports are somewhere in 2 to 3 months to really see the benefit. Although you should start feeling better pretty quickly. quickly after using it. That really helps. Personal preferences, there's things called a Strasburg sock. I'm not crazy about the sock. There's splints that go on the back of your leg and underneath your heel, which I'm less fond of. And then there's some that are called dorsal splints. They go on the front of your ankle and straps around the bottom that hold you. And some others find that to be a little more comfortable. So you could try that. And then in addition to that, there are things that are plantar fascia specific stretching, or if you take your ankle and cross it over your other knee and take a hold of your toes and pull them up or back, that's a specific stretch that's good for that, and you can probably Google that and find it. And then, you know, your standard icing, rolling a tennis ball underneath it to massage. And this is something I was going to try. I haven't done it yet. But I was thinking about how to combine the ice and massage. You know, typically people will, like, fill a small bottle with water and freeze it. But I was thinking of making a water balloon. You know, you could take a balloon and fill it with water to just the right size, tie it off, and put it in your freezer. And then you could roll that underneath your foot to ice and massage at the same time.
Better local pressure.
Yeah, better local pressure, too. Yeah. And I have to thank my kids because they always like to take water balloons and put them in the freezer and then take the balloon off and see the different shapes. So I thought, oh, that's a great way to massage your foot.
See, one of your kids could fill in for me then.
Exactly.
I wonder if you could do that with a tennis ball.
Yeah.
You know, if they put a hole in the tennis ball, you'd get a perfectly round...
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that way, because I know about the shape issues when you put the balloon in the freezer.
I don't know. I think the tennis ball wouldn't be getting cold enough because the outside would be too thick.
Yeah. Oh.
But those are some of the standard things, the stretching, you know, backing off on the toe raise stuff. So just being consistent with your stretching, using the night splint, icing, and making sure you're wearing good shoes for your daily activities.
Yeah, and that can usually take, depending how long you've had it, it can take a good 4 to 6 weeks. And then if those things don't work, Stefan, then that's where a physical therapist could come into play and analyze your foot and ankle biomechanics, your foot and ankle posture. Sometimes a shoe insert, an orthotic, can help get rid of the symptoms and help keep them from coming back again.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We had a question from Charles in Sun Prairie who says, I'm 63 years old and this past weekend, I had 3 falls. Are there any balancing or core exercises that could help me with that in the future? And boy, 3 falls. I'm hoping that Charles was.
Yeah, I hope he's okay.
And I hope he was doing something that might have, led to potential for, if just normal walking, that'd be a lot of.
That would be concerning. There are a lot of good exercises, different type of exercises to promote better balance. But whenever I see anybody who's coming in for a fall, I want to know, why'd you fall? What happened? And people fall for lots of reasons. It can be related to blood pressure, low blood pressure. They sit up too fast, stand up too fast, and they fall. Some people faint. Some people are tripping over their toes. And so, Charles, what I'd recommend is before you start thinking about exercise is to figure out why you fell. You know, if it's something like you've just tripped over your dog 3 times, then I'd feel better about this. And do something with your dog, maybe. But if it's not something like that, then...
Or the cat.
The cat, that's right. Or a rug. But seeing a physician would be worth doing. And they would do a neurological screen. They would check your medications, check your blood pressure. There's so many reasons for falling. And once you've ruled out the more serious things, there are exercises that can be done for that.
Jerry in Menasha has a question. Jerry, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I've lived with long-time peripheral vascular disease in both legs, and I wear surgical hose. And I have very poor circulation in my feet. I am not a diabetic. However, the 2 middle toes on my left foot have neuropathy. They sting, they burn, they are painful. I try all sorts of little cushioning things with them. I've tried various inserts, various gel caps on them. Is there any exercise I can do that will alleviate or certainly help that stabbing, stinging, burning pain I get in those 2 middle toes?
Yeah, it can really make things miserable. Neuropathies can be really, really difficult for people. And Jerry, unfortunately, I'm not aware of any particular exercise that can help significantly with that pain. It sounds like some of the things that you typically would recommend, along with certain medications that you've tried already, but I'm not aware of any stretch or any strengthening exercise or desensitization type of activity that's been shown to be effective with what you're describing.
Unfortunate. I wish we had more.
Yeah, that's one of those really difficult problems that, you know, once you've tried all the usual padding, support, you know, activity, there's not much left.
I'm very sorry, Jerry. Thank you very much for calling, and good luck. Appreciate it. Tom in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Tom. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Got a problem with my right shoulder. I lost 50 pounds and I started playing racquetball, and I really cracked my wrist when I play, and then my shoulder started bothering me and I couldn't play anymore because it just bothered me too much. And then I was riding my bike and my feet were locked in on my bike, and I was trying to get in my garage, and I think the garage door opened, the bike stopped, and I fell in the cement on that shoulder. Right now I'm going to a chiropractor, and he's treating me for impingement. He also said there might be some muscles underneath the rotator cuff that could possibly be tore. When I go to sleep at night, it used to wake me up when I left it. I'd have to sleep on it. If I slept on the opposite side and let it dangle, it would hurt me a lot, wake me up. That's better. He's got me doing some exercises with rubber bands to strengthen the muscles underneath the rotator cuff. It's kind of across the chest both ways, and keeping the elbow in with the finger up, and then doing a pull up with it with the finger down. It seems a little bit better, but it's still bothering me, and I got a click in there too. Going on. I was wondering, do you probably need an MRI or something? And it also, I get zingers in my hand if I reach for stuff in my upper tricep and bicep.
How long ago was this fall, Tom?
It was about 2 months ago.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you should be more better, to use that unscientific term, from that. So may I ask your age?
I'm 58.
Okay. All right. Because there's a lot we know about the history of rotator cuff and rotator cuff pathology across the lifespan. So, you know, you probably had some existing rotator cuff pathology or impingement probably after the racquetball stuff, and then the fall probably stirred things up quite a bit. It sounds like the exercise is taking you part of the way, but not completely better. And then if you're getting symptoms down into your fingers, you know, that would suggest potentially neck pathology. So, you know, there are a lot of variables that are unknown that are still hanging out there. So after 2 months, you should be better. So I would go the next step and be evaluated, you know, either by a physical therapist who specializes in this. I don't know that you need any additional imaging at this point, but potentially an examination to rule out your neck as the source of pain, to see how much is coming from your neck, how much is coming from your shoulder, and look at what you're doing in terms of your exercise program. The rubber bands, you know, they're kind of a double-edged sword. You know, for some people, they work really well. For others, they're not the right exercise intervention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'd kind of look for another strategy at this point for getting yourself better. I think the path you're on is not getting you where you need to go.
There you go. Good luck, Tom. Thank you. Lynn and Eau Claire, up to you now. Hi, Lynn. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry and guests. August 12th, I'm 60. I had a knee replaced, my right knee. And, you know, I'm up, I'm walking, I'm doing stairs, I'm doing well. I am not on the bicycle. It terrifies me to go around. And the issue is, for me, the difference between the my physical therapists. One is gentle, and she pulls on my leg, and, you know, to kind of align it, it feels like. You know, I don't know if that's, you know, in my imagination. And the other one is just more military. And with her, I'm, you know, I'm swollen and unable to move for 2 days. And I'm, at this point in time, I'm really tired of the whole thing.
Yes.
You know, I'd like to go back 7 weeks and change my mind. I felt
right.
better before. I know it's, it'll get better. But,
is there a question in there?
Yeah, the question is, like, what can I do for myself? You know, it is a drag to have to, you know, get in the car, you know, go. And, I mean, it's a lot of work getting there. It's painful. And is there things I can do for myself? Right now I'm cleaning the filter for the hot tub. Okay. I get into my hot tub because it's also affected gimping around my hip and my low back. So I get into the hot tub and I do some gentle strengthening exercises in there for my hip and back.
So let me ask this. How much range of motion do you have at your knee?
I can get flat. I can get it straight,
okay.
And I'm up to 103. But,
okay.
You know.
All right. All right. You're getting there.
Yeah. 7 weeks. That's not too bad.
Yeah. 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 You're on your way. You know, I would probably stick with the PT until I got to 120 degrees of flexion. If you have somebody that you like to see where you're not sore for 2 days after, I don't think you should be sore for 2 days after your physical therapy at this point. So the physical therapy should be, I visualize this as a relatively flat line. So you go in, you should feel a little better when you're done, a little bit looser. You know, you feel like you've worked your muscles, you feel like you've worked out, but you don't have more pain. And it's a subtle but important difference.
Yeah.
If you are in pain for 2 days afterwards, then as you said, you hobble around, you decrease your other activities. There's no net gain. So we want you to be able to continue the rest of your usual activities and to walk as normally as possible when you finish your physical therapy. So I think you should
get rid of the one thing.
Well, yeah, I think you should stick with the person where it's working for you and you're not sore afterwards. And you should talk to them about what you can do in your hot tub at home to work on your range of motion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with Laurie. It's not unusual sometimes after, especially with this type of procedure, you need to get your range of motion back as quickly as possible. And so there is some discomfort and some pain early on as you're trying to get that range of motion back. But having pain and swelling for 2 days afterward, that would tell me that was too much. Soreness for a few hours, a little stiffer the next morning. But like Laurie said, you should be leaving with more range than when you started. And doing work at home versus going into the clinic, you're at a stage where maybe going in a little less often would be appropriate. But at some point, these exercises need to be progressed. Otherwise, you're going to stop making any gains at all. So, you know, usually we start spreading visits out over time and just coming in and progress your home program. But I'd like to know about the difficulty of coming in. Maybe there's a clinic that's closer to your home, so I don't know how far you're driving to and from. But look, you know, convenience and location is pretty important for lots of people.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. We had a Facebook question from Jennifer, who runs, and she says, when running right around mile 8, my left knee begins to hurt. I'm training for a half marathon on October 3rd. My longest run in training was 12 miles, and I had to walk that last mile. Anything I could do now to get through the race without having to resort to walking that last mile?
So we're a couple weeks out. Well, and it's only one knee. It's not the other knee. So, you know, in the absence of information about what's bothering her knee, is there anything she can do to get through it? You know, my guess is she's already tried some things. You know, for a race, sometimes if you take an anti-inflammatory, it will help with pain control if the big issue is pain, if she can tolerate that during a race. I don't know if she can get in to see somebody prior to that to see if there's some taping. Sometimes if it's a kneecap problem, using some specialized taping techniques can really be effective. The question would be whether or not she could get in to see anybody to have that knee examined prior to the race to see if taping would help her. But, you know, but in a 2-week span, you know, my guess is she's tried the obvious thing. She's looked at her shoes. She's looked at where she's running. If she's running on a slope, like on a street or a trail where there's an angle and it catches up with her about mile 8, it may not be the same if she ran on a different surface. So I expect that she's probably tried to problem solve some of those things. So, like I said, in the short run, getting through a race, you know, either a painkiller of some sort, or if she can get in to have it looked at to see if there's a taping technique. The other option, if it is a kneecap problem, she could try a pull-on knee sleeve that has a hole cut out for her kneecap. She could try that and see if that provides any support at all for a kneecap.
Would you rest it? Would you not just not run for a few days to see? All right, with 3
Well,
weeks
you know, we don't know when the pain started, you know, around mile 8. If it's a relatively recent occurrence, yeah, resting. She's probably in sufficient shape to run the race, although there will be a certain amount of anxiety about, is my knee going to hurt during the race?
Right.
So it's a judgment call.
Yeah, but adding on more miles is not going to help. At this
for
stage.
Sure. Yeah. There we go. Good luck, Jennifer. Appreciate your call. Lori Tyne, Brody, and Bill Boisenault, our guests today. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, taking a look at recovering from all the various activities of summer, and now we're into early fall with our two guests, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne, Brody. Physical therapists at the University of Wisconsin. Always great to have them along. And thank you for listening in. Call at 1-800-642-1234. Lines are all filled right now. You could email us at talk@wpr.org, or you could post on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page title, to get there, go to The Larry Mueller Show. Just type that in on Facebook, and you'll get right there. We had an email question from DJ and Spooner. I'm 60 and I have lower back pain, which has been a little more than background noise for about 40 years. Recently diagnosed with arthritis. Yeah, any suggestions for exercises or meds to help alleviate the pain at night so that I could sleep better?
Okay. Well, osteoarthritis, you know, usually is worse during the day, again, whether it's your knee or your back, when we're weight-bearing, we're standing, we're physically active, but it can also cause pain at night. And so things I look at are sleeping positions. Are there certain positions that he wakes up in that wake him up? For example, on the stomach. A lot of people, they wake up due to back pain when they end up on their stomach. So to keep them off their stomach, one of the things I recommend either is they have extra pillows to pack underneath their top arm so they don't roll flat on their stomach. I have them roll up a sheet, tie it around their waist so the knot is in front of the stomach. So if they roll over on their stomach, it wakes them up enough where they get off their gut. Sometimes it's a mattress that's too soft. Sometimes it's a mattress that's too hard. It's like the three bears and the porridge. Finding a mattress that is just right for you. I mean, it's mattress, it's sleeping position. Sometimes I have people do some stretching before they go to bed to help them get through the night. Now, if it's been going on this long and if it's really interfering with sleep, then I recommend that you see a physical therapist who can dig in a little deeper to these types of things. You know, generally with osteoarthritis in the low back, hip flexibility is really important. So when we do bend and twist and sit and move, the more the hips can do, the less the back has to do. And then you put strengthening on top of that. So it's a combination of things, and if night is a really big issue for him, again, that's what I'd go in and talk about.
Steve in Rome, thanks for waiting. Hello, what's on your mind?
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to hear your opinions on self-treatment for carpal tunnel. I retired in February of this year, and about a year prior to that, I started developing carpal tunnel. I've been a writer all my life, and I've been on the computer off and on since retirement, and I still have this tingling and numbness in my fingers, and I just wondered if there's anything I can do short of surgery.
Well, is it has it been diagnosed as carpal tunnel?
Well, I've had my doctor look at it, and he suggested he didn't really call it carpal tunnel.
Okay. Well, it makes a difference, because carpal tunnel is primarily a wrist problem, and then we focus on wrist and hand posture. It could also be coming from your neck, in which case we start looking farther up and we look at head and neck posture. So, well, as you can see, the theme here is posture. So yes, there are things that you can do, and potentially a couple of visits to a physical therapist could look at your posture, can talk to you about your workstation and your workstation setup, and ergonomic analysis to see if there are improvements that can be made there, and that certainly could alleviate your symptoms or reduce your symptoms so that you could stay at your computer for longer periods.
Okay.
You know, and from there it goes down to talking about how much time you spend at your computer and how to structure your computer time so that you can stop short of your symptoms. We also, as part of that postural set, think about strengthening, stretching exercises to optimize your posture so it's easier for you to stay in good posture for longer periods of time so that you can sit at your computer longer and sustain those postures.
Okay, good.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Mindy in Reedsburg. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. I was calling because I was concerned about my mother. She had fallen last winter, and she had a torn AC, and they said she had a pinched nerve in her elbow. And she went through a physical therapy and had some cortisone shots. And now her arm, which is her non-dominant arm, her left arm, appears to be smaller than her right. And she still has, like, a huge swollen area near her elbow. And now she's also developing, like, blood pooling to the surface in that arm. And I'm wondering if it's related to the cortisone shots or lack of activity with using that arm.
Well, I'll get started, and then Bill will chime in. So where does it look smaller? And where were the cortisone shots? Were they in the elbow or the shoulder?
They were in the shoulder, and it's just her arm, like, from, like, her whole arm, her bicep to the middle of her, you know, to her wrist area. Just when you hold them out, her arm looks smaller than the other side.
And then where is the lump around her elbow?
It's right.
Is it in front? Is it on the side?
I would say if she had her wrist facing up, it's on the inside.
On the inside? Is it...
Of her elbow.
Of her elbow, kind of above her elbow?
More up the arm, or...?
Maybe a little above the elbow.
I'm just wondering if she ruptured her biceps.
Right, that's what it sounds like.
Yeah. It's possible that what happened when she fell is that she ruptured her biceps, the long head of her biceps, and what happens is that the biceps becomes detached at the shoulder, which will give you shoulder pain, especially shoulder pain that looks like rotator cuff, and then the biceps will roll down your upper arm like a window shade, and it'll create a small lump down by your elbow where it's rolled up. So she'll be weaker in that arm. It'll obviously look smaller than the other arm, and there are specific treatments for that. So has she been in physical therapy since this?
Yeah, she did go through physical therapy, and it proved to be pretty painful, so she eventually stopped going.
Oh, yeah, but you take that over,
yeah,
Bill.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a swig of my coffee. And
So it sounds like I would agree with Laura. I can't think of what else would account for everything you've described. And the general atrophy or the getting smaller down in the forearm, if she's using that arm less, then that would account for that. The blood pooling or the bruising, you know, that's not typical. I mean, that doesn't quite fit unless, again, she's just not using her arm very much. When was the last time she saw her physician for this?
Probably
spring.
Springtime. Yeah, it may be worthwhile going back in, and so they can see what her arm looks like. You know, they can do some testing related to the biceps issue, but, you know, the bruising or the pooling that you described, that's also concerning.
Okay.
And be able to describe that to them. You know, again, we had a couple other callers describe, you know, having more pain going to physical therapists, and sometimes there is some pain associated in early stages, but when a patient comes back after the second and third time and describing this much pain to me, then usually I change what I'm doing. I look,
yeah.
You know, I reassess what I'm doing and try a different approach.
How old is she?
Yeah.
69.
Yeah.
What is the treatment
that's
for the...
pretty young. For the biceps, they don't do anything with the biceps. People
right.
function pretty well without that long head of the biceps. There's still a short head intact, and surprisingly, the biceps is not your strongest elbow flexor, or it's not the muscle that is primarily responsible for bending your elbow. There are other muscles that do that task. It does have some impact at the shoulder, so it can cause, you can have some shoulder pain because your biceps isn't working. But, you know, a good physical therapist should do a pretty thorough exam from the neck to the shoulder to the elbow to the wrist and hand to really find out where the pathology is and address it at the right area and get the dosage of exercise correct.
Right.
So if it was pretty acute after her fall, you know, there might have just been a lot going on. And at this point, since she's still having difficulty, I'd go back and kind of reassess at this point and see where she's at this point and what she needs to go forward. And if you were unhappy with the previous physical therapist, I would see somebody else.
Yeah, for sure.
Excellent. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, mm-hmm. She's not that old.
Oh, no, not at all.
Not at all. Michael in Milwaukee, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hello. About 6 months ago, I took a fall on my shoulder right on the grass, and I felt something pop. It was very painful. Went to the emergency room, and they took an x-ray and diagnosed it as an AC tear, and my clavicle is protruding above my shoulder a little bit, so there's some deformity. They gave me a sling, and then they told me to see my doctor, and I haven't since then that time. But in the next few weeks, the pain went away, and I realized I had freedom of movement, but I still have that bone sticking out of my shoulder, and it's kind of unsightly, and I was wondering if there was any kind of therapy other than surgery to get that bone back to where it is or something I have to live with.
Right. So the AC joint is the acromial clavicular joint, and it's the connection
right.
between the collarbone and our shoulder blade or the scapula.
Right.
And there are some important ligaments that keep those two bones connected. And what you describe is pretty common, especially if you have a complete tear of the supporting ligaments, that you have a deformity. The big thing is, and I understand what it probably looks like, but if you're moving well and you're able to use that arm with daily activities, really think twice about surgery. The surgery may make it look a little better, but it's probably not going to be functioning at the level that you are right now. So it's pretty typical to have a residual problem like this when you have a significant tear.
Yes, I was worrying about the functionality, but then in the summer I was wanting to see if I could hit a baseball. I could.
Mm-hmm.
I could catch a ball. I can move my hand almost in every freedom of motion. But every so often it'll be sore in that area, the shoulder and the neck would seem a little sore if I kind of overdo it.
Right.
But other than that, I have to seem like a full range of functionality. But, you know, I just, you know, I'm not going to look very good in a swimsuit.
Yeah. That's pretty typical. They won't go in and operate on those. Even if they saw you acutely, they
right.
are unlikely to want to operate on that. So, and,
right.
you know, and the neck issue and the little bit of soreness and stuff that you have, you know, probably isn't related to the bone sticking up, but probably to the damage that occurred at the time you fell. So
okay.
if you fell hard enough to tear those ligaments, you probably fell hard enough to strain some of the muscle tendon units, to maybe sprain a little bit in your neck also.
Yeah.
Okay.
You might describe that as what happened when you were scoring the winning touchdown in your college days.
There you go. Yeah.
We're kind of a different story. Yeah. Larry, you're right.
We won't tell anyone.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks a lot for calling. Oh, my goodness me. We have lots more. A Facebook question from Calvin. Is the price protection, rest, ice, compression, elevate method for ligamentous tear recovery the most useful for athletic individuals?
Yes, in the acute phase. Yes, I mean, at least in the first 24 hours, and then depending upon what the injury is, then it starts to deviate from there. But if you're on the soccer field and you go down with an ankle sprain, that's your go-to.
Yeah.
So price, protection, rest, ice, compression,
Elevation.
So to help get rid of the swelling, you've got to get rid of the edema or the swelling as quickly as possible. And rest from activity doesn't necessarily mean bed rest, but you want to let that area heal. And then as the pain reduces, swelling should reduce, then you start resuming activity. But Larry's right. It depends on what ligament it is and to what degree it's damaged.
And the last thing would be, and people sometimes have this question, is I wouldn't take an anti-inflammatory in the first 48 hours.
Oh. Right.
So you can take a pain reliever, but not anti-inflammatory.
Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, our guests. You can join in at 800-642-1234. We'll take a look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be back. You stay with us. Well, whether it's an old injury that you just can't seem to fully recover from, or maybe it's a new twinge that's made an appearance, you may have an ache or a pain to deal with. And sometimes it's hard to know just what's an annoyance and eventually going to go away on its own, or when you need some attention, medical attention. Larry Mueller here. And our two guests today know all about that. Bill Boisenault, senior physical therapist at UW Hospitals and Clinics, and in his last, kind of his last time, he's leaving us for Washington, D.C.
Heading east.
But we know where to find him.
We know where to find him.
That's right.
And we will. And Lori Tyne Brody, of course, our other guest, physical therapist, she's staying here.
I'm staying here. Yes, I am.
And so we're glad for that. And glad to have you listening in, as a matter of fact, on Bill's last program with us. Join in with your own questions or comments. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Go to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can also post a question or comment there. And let's turn to Bob in Claybanks next. Bob, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having the show.
Sure.
I injured my knee. Well, I was walking about a week ago, and I heard a pop in my knee, which had been sore for about a month, and it got really sore for the rest of the day. I put ice on it. It didn't really swell up. I went to see the doctor last week, and at that time I just had pain around the kneecap. But now it's gotten behind the knee and kind of running down my leg a little bit. And I'm taking a statin, and I was wondering if that might be one of the, if there was any side effects that might be related to this issue.
Well, go ahead, Bill.
Okay. Well, we'll both chime in here. So, Bob, when you were walking, did you slip? Did you stumble a little bit when this pop happened?
No.
Okay. Okay. All right. And it had been sore about a month before that, correct?
Yeah. I've had bursitis in the past, so I kind of wrote that off as, being a reoccurrence of that.
Okay. All right. Well, statins in some people can impact muscle in particular and cause myositis, inflammation, and sometimes weakness. But in terms of setting people up for a tear or a rupture, I'm not familiar with that.
I haven't read about that or heard of that either.
Yeah, and now that's more behind your knee and going down the back of the leg a little bit, I wonder if this sounds a bit like our earlier caller with a Baker's cyst, where sometimes you can get fluid within the posterior part, the back part of the knee capsule, this kind of bubble in the tire. That certainly can cause tightness in the calf and behind the knee with walking when you try to stretch out your calf musculature. So is there weakness around that knee? Is it buckling on you or giving out on you?
No. And it kind of comes and goes, you know, as far as the pain goes. So sometimes it's a little uncomfortable when I'm lying down. You know, if I'm in a certain position, I start to have some minor ache in the knee.
Okay. All right. And it's not locking up on you. I don't think anything is shifting inside your knee, thinking of like meniscus maybe. Okay, so you don't have that either.
They did an x-ray, and there's some thought of some minor arthritis in the knee, but they can't tell the meniscus without the MRI. So
are you getting better, Bob?
Kind of comes and goes. You know, I have some episodes a couple times during the day where it's, you know, pretty sore. But then, you know, it's fine for the rest of the day.
Right. But you're still getting those episodes a couple times a day on a regular basis. It's not like those episodes are getting fewer and farther between or less intense?
No, it's been about the same for the last two or three days, I'd say.
Okay. Well, you know, I'd go in and I'd have a physical therapist take a look at it, see if there's any particular exercises that would be useful to prevent this from coming back and help you recover from this more quickly. You did say that your knee was sore for about a month before then. So the question is, why was it sore? You've had a history of bursitis, but why do you have a history of bursitis? Unless you're someone who kneels for most of his, you know, daytime work or whatever, most people don't get a bursitis in just one knee. So figuring out why you were set up for this in the beginning and then what happened when that popped and what we can do to prevent it from coming back, I think would probably serve you in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thanks very much for calling. As you were talking about bending knees, I wondered about the incidence of bursitis in catchers, baseball catchers, over time or when they retire. You're on your knees.
Yeah.
Positioned on your knees for...
Well, you know, it's interesting. So if you look sort of anthropologically at, for example, people in China where they grow up culturally doing a lot of squatting or sitting in that position, they don't have the knee or kneecap problems like we do in the United States. I think it has to do with the culture and training that way. So my dad was a baseball catcher. Mm-hmm. And I remember him in his 80s, because he had spinal stenosis, when he'd be out walking on, his stenosis would get bad, he would get down in a full catcher squat at 80. He could sit down, he could get his butt to his heels in his 80s.
Yeah.
And I think because he grew up and he didn't, you know, he had a little knee problem here or there, but for the most part, he had no knee problems.
Yeah.
So maybe just the opposite.
It may be. Yeah.
There we go. John in Appleton. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. In 2003, I had my right knee scoped and was told that it was a torn meniscus. And it felt great after that for about 12 months. Now the doctors are telling me that I need a complete knee replacement, but that I'm too young and the risks are too high because of my diabetes, and they're not worried about the replacement knee failing, but where the knee connects to the bone is what they say. I've tried the cortisone, the Hyaline injections. So what would be my, should I go through with the procedure?
Hmm. John, may I ask how old you are?
47.
Oh yeah, you are young. So, you know, the point being a knee replacement, you know, 15 years or so, you're looking at a redo, you know, in 15 or so years.
Yeah.
And the primary, you know, the original one is, you know, may go well for you, but the redo could be a problem. So you'd be delaying that issue. So, and it, does the knee give you a lot of trouble now?
Well, I mean, I go two or three times a week where it gives out. It pops out. It, you know, I almost fall down because it gives out.
Okay.
And I can't sleep at night. I can't fall asleep because I'm so much pain. I go through the VA system, so they're very reluctant for pain meds.
Yeah.
Basically, I don't get any pain. Yeah. Let's put it that way.
Is it mostly the inside of your knee? Do you know? Is it the medial compartment? That's the.
It's mostly the front bottom left.
Front bottom left. Are you bowed legged or knock kneed?
Slightly. They say I'm slightly bow legged.
Okay.
Both tell me I am. I guess that's perfect. Attention.
Okay. So have they tried bracing with you at all?
I do have several Donjoy braces that do give me relief.
Okay.
But I end up with blisters and sores on my leg because either I'm putting it on too tight, which physical therapist says, no, you're doing fine, or I wear it too long. I don't know what's the case.
Yeah. Well, if they've looked at you and they say you're not, it's fitting you correctly, then your alternative is you're wearing it too long. So, I'd probably go with that, with sort of modulating your activities to wear the brace only for certain periods of time when you're up and active and then taking it off at other times. If I were to exercise to try to keep it strong, I'd be in a pool if I were you to unweight the leg.
Sure.
To keep yourself strong, and that may also provide some pain relief because of the unweighting.
Okay.
But really, those are your options. If you've been to PT, have a strengthening program, you've tried the unloading brace, you've tried the injections, that's kind of where we're at.
And John, in terms of the pain meds at night, I understand the opioids and things like that. But have you talked to your physician about have you tried Tylenol or a non-steroidal to help you at night?
I do get some relief from Tylenol arthritis.
Okay.
But I'm on so many other meds, and I have a bad pancreas, so I don't want to mess things up more inside of my body.
No, exactly. Okay, all right, go. Well, as long as you're talking to your physician about what you're trying to take, and you know, I'm not saying this makes a huge difference in people, but sometimes wearing a knee sleeve at night just to keep a little more warmth in the knee, I've had some people tell me that's helped them a little bit. If you can do anything that helps you 10% here, 10% there, maybe you end up sleeping better. If you're on your side, a pillow between your knees. If you're on your back, a pillow underneath your knees.
Okay.
Can keep your knees in what we more call the neutral position or the loose pack position. That can help a little bit too.
Sounds good. Well, yeah, I have some good things I should be trying here, and I will try. So I would basically, you're saying maybe I should wait.
You should wait as long as you possibly can.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you for your help.
You bet. Good luck.
Thanks, John. Thank you very much for calling. Oh, Kathleen in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hello. You're welcome. I almost gave up here. I just felt compelled to call in. I've been listening to your show for the first time, I might add, and I heard the gentleman that had the numb wrist, and you people were trying to help him establish if his carpal tunnel, et cetera. And that's why I had to call, to get the word out there. I'm a therapist, and several years ago, I had a client she's a pianist, and she had two numb fingers on her one hand. Well, you can imagine, because she's a pianist, how difficult that was for her. And I worked with her, and it would get better, but it never went away. I got her to my chiropractor, and I thought perhaps it was neck-related, blah, blah, blah. Well, then I went and I took a course in orthopedic massage. And I'm here to tell you that it was due to difficulties in the pectoralis minor. And after administering the orthopedic massage to that area, the numbness that she had in her fingers totally was gone, disappeared. And I'm still working with her a couple times a month. But every so often she'll come and say, oh, you got to do that chest thing again for me because my fingers are starting to get numb. And we do it, and it's eradicated again for months at a time. So I wanted to share that with you to educate you about the importance of soft tissue work in addition to the physical therapy, which is wonderful and helps a lot of people I work with. But some of the soft tissue doesn't get talked about as much as it could, even with this man with a knee pain, perhaps if he had some massage with it. And I'm talking about therapeutic massage, not a club rub. I'm talking about advanced remedial type work. So that's why I called in.
Mm-hmm.
And
Well, Kathleen, I thank you very much for calling. And Bill, let's comment from you.
I'm glad you called, too. You know, we don't often distinguish between joint mobilization, soft tissue mobilization, massage. And I think the idea that for most people, including the examples you're giving today, Kathleen, is a combination of manual therapy, exercise, and patient education. And you emphasize different things depending on where they are in the stage of recovery. And the pectoralis minor is a little muscle in the front of the shoulder. It's very closely related to the nerves that go down to the arm and big blood vessels. And so when Lori discussed earlier about neck and posture, that's a muscle, well, it's not a very big one, can really impact posture through that shoulder girdle area. Mm. And it can cause a lot of symptoms distal, including, you know, carpal tunnel-like presentations. So glad she called. And soft tissue mobilization and massage is a component of the manual therapy approach.
All right. And thank you very much for calling and talking about your work. Appreciate it very much. I want to give Jim in Milwaukee a chance to join us next. So let's go to Jim. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, I'm a 67-year-old man that have been an avid bodybuilder, weightlifter for years, and a couple months ago, I don't know, I was doing some weightlifting. They call it a fly exercise, where you kind of are on a machine and you stretch, and kind of, I did something to my shoulder where it got quite a bit of pain. The range of motion isn't too bad. And I've been trying to heal it by just bodybuilding again or doing some type of real, real light exercise with some repetition to it. And I was wondering if you could help me with that.
So are there any particular motions that you can or cannot do with your shoulder or weight exercises that you can or can't do?
It seems like when I do a pull with a machine where you like a lat pull, but it's not a lat pull, it's like you put your hand and you kind of go across your body with it, and it's hard for me to pull on it, but letting go is okay.
Well, you know, probably the most common injury we see in weightlifters is rotator cuff tears, so you know, I guess I would say you could continue to try to get it better through weightlifting, or you could go have it examined and find out specifically what you injured at the time, and then you could get some very specific strengthening exercises to help recover from that. So, you know, if you've torn your rotator cuff, you know, then that's going to direct you one direction. If you've damaged some other static structure in your shoulder, such as the glenoid labrum, which sometimes happens when you have a strong pull of your biceps tendon, then that would lead you a different direction for strengthening exercises around your shoulder. So, you know, in general, getting a more definitive understanding of what you damaged at the time you injured your shoulder would direct the treatment. Does that make sense?
I believe so. How long does something like this take usually to start feeling better?
Well, if it was a simple muscle strain, we would expect you to be feeling better in the 3 to 4 week range. So, so if you're still not feeling any better, then either it was more significant damage or the things that you're doing currently are preventing it from healing, which is really the downside of the self-treatment with weightlifting. And unless you know what you've damaged and know how to dose the exercises appropriately, you can cause more damage than help.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you for calling. And Keith in Dodgeville, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Oh, thank you. Quickly before my question, I just wanted to, evidently, we need to say goodbye to Bill. I've worked with him off and on over the years, and he has certainly helped me a lot.
Good morning, Keith. Thank you.
Hi, with his wonderfully creative stretching and anyway, I've got a question about my knee. Two things. One, I've been told I have a lax fibula tibula joint that does cause me some trouble biking. but I also, my cartilage, my meniscus, is thick, but it's starting to come apart, not radially, but kind of in a layer. The split is in a layer. And I had started yoga, and my main question is, are there positions I shouldn't be putting those knees in with that?
Yeah. What about it?
Well, your knee will tell you, I guess. Typically, anything, for example, where you cross your knee across, or your ankle across your opposite knee, where you put that kind of torque on your knee, the twisting torque, where you're turning at your hip, typically those are the hardest on your knee joint. If you can get into full flexion, as in a child's pose, when you sit back all the way on your heels, if you can do that, that's good for your knee to help it recover. But if it hurts, then you don't. So, you know, if you've damaged that meniscus and it needs time to heal, it will tell you what it will and won't do. And the idea is to try to, over time, as it heals, try to work into those ranges and positions.
Yeah, Keith, I'm assuming you've done a lot of modifications, some of the poses already. And if you're trying something new, just go into that position slow and then come out of that position slowly as kind of a test to see how that knee is going to do with it. But Lori's right. Your knee will tell you if this was too much or not the right position to be in.
Okay. Is there any relation between the meniscus tear and that tibia joint problem?
Not directly. That with the joint up above where your shin bone and your fibula meet, I mean, it's connected to the knee, but I don't think there's necessarily a direct connection to the meniscus itself.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you can have problems at a neighboring joint that throws off how you walk or run and can cause more pressure somewhere. But, you know, if that joint is not interfering with generally how you walk and bend and do your work, then probably not.
And thanks a lot for calling, Keith. And, Bill, thank you. Here we go, 20 years.
Yeah, hard to believe. Larry, I want to thank you. And, of course, Judith and the late Jim Packard as well.
Oh, Jim.
Yeah.
We missed
Jim. It's been a great run. I've learned a ton. I want to thank the callers. I always walk away from here appreciating in some situations what a good health care system we have, and then other times what a cumbersome, difficult system we have and how people struggle to navigate through the system. And, you know, that realization has made me a better clinician and a better educator. But I want to thank you and Lori.
Yeah, and we want to thank Bill, too. We're going to miss you. But Bill's moving on to our national headquarters at American Physical Therapy Association, where he's going to direct research, education.
And practice.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, how perfect is that? And how lucky are we all to have Bill in that position? He's going to be making big changes in the positive direction for patients across the country.
Yeah, that's the hope.
Thanks from the bottom of our heart.
Yep,
thank you so much. Bill, and maybe we'll get him back. He'll come back or get him on by phone.
There you go.
There, in the meantime, Lori's sister will be joining us next month. Thanks so much to Bill and to Lori, and thank you so much. Well, it was a hard one for us to do here, this last one. But we appreciate your patience and for calling in, and I hope you will stay with us because there's lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.